Like when it's homicides, we used to pop up on the scene. I call Miss Glory. She'll
hold
call
it. Whoa. Yeah. There's a homicide. There's a shooting.
We pop up on the scene to talk and comfort the families.
Right.
Tell us more about that.
Skylar called me. Come on, Miss Glory, meet me here. Something just happened. And no question, there we go.
Skylar Pawnell and Gloria Hicks are two remarkable, heroic women. They live in the high-crime community of East St. Louis, Illinois, population about 17,000, with one of the highest homicide rates in the country. Skylar's son, Aaron, was killed in one of those street shootings. Yet the homicide rate in East St. Louis is declining, partly because of bridge building between police and community, and partly due to the community building of both Gloria and Skylar. Listen to their stories of dealing with the trauma of gun violence and finding healing in community service to other survivors. Justice is accountability plus healing. Justice is making things right. This is Justice Voices. So our guests today are Skylar Pawnell and Gloria Hicks. Skylar and Gloria, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's our privilege. I heard the two of you in a webcast back a ways, and I thought, these two people have stories that need to be told, and they have voices that need to be heard. And that's what we do with Justice Voices. You both have stories. Let's start with you, Skylar. You lost a son to gun violence, your son Aaron.
Yes.
Tell us about Aaron. Who was he? What did he love? What were his dreams? Share that with us.
Aaron loved sports. He loved football, baseball. He could play any sport, and he thought he was good and couldn't beat anybody. He'll challenge anybody. But most of all, he loved people. He accepted Christ at an early age, and he influenced his friends to get baptized and accept Christ as well. He's a father, a son, a brother, a grandson, a family member, a friend. He was the type, when he met you once, the next time, you was family. He had a big heart. The life of the party. I can go on and on and on, but I won't. And when he died, the thing that he was trying to do, he had one daughter, and she is now 10 years old. And the day before he was murdered, he was supposed to start a new job so he can, you know, be able to take care of his baby more. He didn't get to do that. He had dreams of getting his high school diploma. I always felt like he was going to be a preacher because when he was little, I would catch him and his older siblings playing church. And he'll be preaching and they'll be beating drums and hitting tambourines and he'd be shouting and screaming, hallelujah, thank you, Lord. I'm like, boy, if you don't stop playing with God, he going to get you. So he loved church. He loved to work with his hands. He helped one of his pastors that he was with. He was helping him rebuild a house. He did construction inside the house and stuff. So he had a lot of qualities and a lot of things that he could bring to the world that people need now.
He sounds like he was somebody who could really make a contribution and all that got cut short.
Yes.
What happened?
From what I understand, I'm not exactly sure because, you know, it's always so many stories when tragedies happen. I just remember being at work and I'm getting that phone call and I'm like, who is this calling me? And they know I'm at work. And it was my little niece on the other end of the phone. And she was like, your son just got killed. And I'm thinking like, which son? Because I have two sons. And she was like, Junebug, because that's what we call him, Junebug. He was named after his grandfather. So I'm like, no. So from what I'm hearing, it started over Facebook. Him and a guy had an argument over Facebook, threw out a page that he shared with his girlfriend. The guy and him were fighting over the girl. And the God threatened him and told him that it was like that whenever he sent him, that he better get him before he get him. So apparently he got him before my son could get him. My son was not a violent person. At the time of the shooting, he did not have a gun. My nephew and maybe two other guys that were with him, I believe they had guns and they were able to shoot back at the guys who were shooting at them. If not, probably all of them be dead. But out of everybody that was involved, my son is the only person that lost his life. He's the only person that got hit. And at that point, I didn't know what to do. My mind was just all over the place. All I could do is scream. And I remember falling down to the floor. And a guy that was my coworker came and helped me up. And I was like, I got to go. I can't stay here. I got to go. I got to go. I don't care how I get there, I gotta go. If I gotta walk, I gotta go. They were trying to calm me down. And it's like, well, we'll take you wherever you need to go. But at that point, my little niece is already on her way to pick me up. So by the time I get to the scene, it's like so many people outside, everybody outside, everybody, kids. The projects is just full of people. They like projects, but I guess that's what they call projects. I'm not sure. But they were full of people, broad daylight. My son was inside the building. All I remember is they had all the yellow tape going everywhere. I remember trying to cross the line and they telling me that I can't go across the line. And I'm like, but my son in there. And I don't really remember a whole lot from that day. I just remember people telling me, you know, they were out here and study people trying to help him. They were taking pictures of him laying there. In his worst time, they walked over his body while he was laying there.
Now, who are you talking about? The police or
no?
Or
not the police. The people that's in the building, the neighborhood, the community people.
People in the community were walking over his body and taking pictures.
Over his body, being disrespectful, taking pictures of him laying there like that, lifeless. A lady was like, she had to stop them because she felt like it was disrespectful. And if it was her child, she would want someone to help too. So she went inside and got a blanket and covered him up with a blanket.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Yes. But my only feeling was the only one time that my son needed me and I felt like I wasn't there. Because normally anytime he called me like mama this or that, he called me for everything. I'm there. That's the only time in my life where I really felt lifeless as a mother, as I let my child down because I wasn't there to help him or to save him.
Well, that sounds like the reaction of a mother who loved your son.
Yes.
You probably know that under circumstances like that, there wouldn't have been anything you could have done.
No, it couldn't have.
But you still feel that, don't you?
Yes, 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 I do. And all the people that was out there, nobody came forward. Well, a few people said they came forward to tell the police what happened. But all those people out there, everybody should have been trying to come forward because it was kids out there that day playing and everything. He was able to get his girlfriend daughter inside the house. For whatever reason, he went back downstairs. I don't know why, but he went back downstairs and that's when he ended up shot. They laid there to wouldn't even call the ambulance. She sat there on them stairs and she rocked my son till he died. Instead of her going to call the ambulance, my nephew had to run from the building that they live in all the way over to the next building where my daughter was living and ask somebody to call 911. That's the only way the police and ambulance were called. Now, do I feel he probably could have made it if she would have went ahead and called the ambulance instead of sitting there and rocking him, making those bullets travel through him? Maybe he could have. I don't know. But I feel like it's more could have been done, you know, and our people, they see things and they don't tell. You all, everybody sat out here and watched this happen and nobody said anything. Y'all watched these boys shoot at my son from the corner. It started at the stop sign. They were coming from the store. They shot all the way from the stop sign, all the way to the building where he lived at.
It is just beyond my capacity to imagine the trauma that you experienced, the grief.
Yes.
And
yes.
Now you've added to it a sense of even guilt.
Yes.
And even if the guilt doesn't make sense in your head, you're feeling it in your heart because you're his mom.
Exactly. And he was my baby, the last kid I had. Yes.
Yeah. Was the person who, or people who committed the murder, were they ultimately apprehended? What happened with the legal system?
The person that comprehended and did the murder, he is still free. He's on the street. I see him every day almost. Like, I can walk into the store and he'll walk into the store. I can be out in traffic and I'll look over he in traffic. I was under the impression that they questioned him or whatever, and I don't really know all the outcomes to it, but I was told that he had family that worked for the police department. So maybe that's a reason. I don't know. But I just feel like he's still out here. And as long as he out here, I don't feel like it's safe for me or anybody else for real. Because you don't know what the motive is when he see me. You know what I'm saying? When I see him, he drop his head. He can't even look me in my face. He drop his head and he hurry up and try to get out from wherever we are. But you want me to believe that you didn't do it and you're not guilty. If you're not guilty, why come every time I see you, you can't look me in my face, you drop your head? That's a sign of guilt to me.
Normally, a person dies, there's a funeral, the community comes together, your friends, there's a sense of closure, even though there's continuing grief. You're experiencing this trauma over and over, it sounds like.
Over and over again. Over and over again, because it's constantly happened. And it don't even have to be my child to affect me. I'm affected by it because when I see it or hear about it, it brings back all those memories that I just went through. All those feelings and pain that I tried so hard to overcome, it all come back again, just like it was my child all over again.
Skyla, I'm going to come back to you. But first, Gloria, you've lost people who were close to you.
My brother was beaten with a gun. And he started having seizures. So a year later, he passed from complications from being whooped with a pistol. And then my nephew just got murdered a year ago. And my sister lost her daughter from cancer. Then 2 months later, her son was killed. So she lost both of her kids. And it's sad, you know, that to have that happen in your family. And like she said, seeing the guy that did that to my brother, every time I see him, he speak, and it just comes back to me what he did, and he's still out there. And the guy that killed my nephew, he killed a girl in one town, drove her in the car to where my nephew was and killed my nephew.
Now, you both live in the community of East St. Louis, Illinois.
Yes.
And East St. Louis has a reputation over years of being a community with a lot of gun violence.
Yes.
A lot of crime.
Yes.
But it's getting better than what it used to be. The crime has slowed down a lot.
It's still a hard community to live in.
Yes.
Now, you two are a part of that community.
Yes, we are.
I'm interested in how the community... Two things. One, how the community helped you deal with your trauma and your grief and your ongoing trauma, and how you, in turn, you two are helping others in your community, people who have themselves been survivors, victims of violence, deal with their trauma and their grief. So tell us, first of all, how the community helped you.
Well, most of my help came from people that's not in my community, to be honest. I found strangers, people that I really didn't even know, to help me more than my community did. Like Moms Demand Action. We all became like, it's like a sisterhood. It's like a bond that I have with those ladies. They've been my backbone, them and Miss Gloria, throughout it all.
Did you two know each other before?
Well, not really know each other. I knew of her because one of her grandchildren is my cousin. I met her on Facebook.
Right. Skyla had put on Facebook, she wanted to start something for crime. And I told her, I inboxed her and said, if you're interested, I can help you. And through this, she became who she is now.
Yeah. It's pretty much been our life.
So you lived in a community that wasn't responsive as much as you probably wish it had been to your needs, your traumas, and to your process of healing to the extent that you have been able to. But a community came together in response to your situations.
Yes.
Is that right, Skyla?
Yes.
And Gloria, you were part of that.
Yes. I had started an event, bringing families together to do a balloon release for people that had lost their loved ones.
Tell us about that.
Okay, well, I just felt like people, need to come together and celebrate the life, and then release the balloons in the air to let people, see that we can do something together. It don't have to be when it happened. Just come together and unite each other, not just for one family, but all families that have lost loved ones. And then CSSJ came to East St. Louis, and what they was talking about was what we needed. So we just started working with them and getting the community together. They do the policy, and we do the hard work.
And what's that organization?
Crime Survivors for Safety and Justice.
Crime Survivors for Safety and Justice.
Yeah, it's in like 12 different states, and it's 4 different chapters in Illinois, and I'm the chapter coordinator for East St. Louis.
Tell us about what you do through that organization, Crime Survivors for Safety and Justice, and what you do in the community and how members of that organization, your community within the broader community, how you respond when there's a shooting.
Okay, so we make sure that the families get the victim compensation form, which it helps the family get compensated after they bury their family. And also what we do is we know organizations that help families during that time, and we connect them with them. We give them the phone numbers, tell them where to go. We get phone calls all the time saying this family lost a loved one. Where can they go? And we just, give them the information and let them know. Also, Kwame Raoult, Illinois Attorney General, changed the law. They're going back 5 years. And so we go out and let people know if you have a crime, you're a victim 5 years back, put your paperwork in, send them in, get compensated. A lot of people don't know about that. So what we do is we let them know what's going on and let them know if you're a victim, go out there and get what you need, because you still have bills. You can, if you can't use it now, put them in accounts for your kids so they can go to college, have something. So that's what we do.
Now, you in that role are a bit of a community activist.
Yes.
And Skyla, you, in your own way, have drawn on your talents, your background as a someone with a culinary arts background.
Yes.
And you help in your own way with people who are survivors of violence. Tell us about that.
Me and Ms. Gloria started off doing Bibles and verses, and we would go to the family house that lost a loved one and give them a Bible and hug them and, let them know that they're not alone, somebody else in it with them. And I felt like it was just so much more that I can do than that. So me and Ms. Gloria sat down one day again, and we had a talk, and she was like, maybe we can do some food or something, for the homeless people that's out on the street, because at that time you would see them walking up and down the streets and stuff. And maybe we can, get some little care packs or something and do something with them. So that's where we started it, with the people that was on the street that was real life actually homeless. We'll cook food and we'll set up and we'll give them have paper plates and stuff and get them, fix them plates and stuff outside. And, kind of like, get ministering to the community, giving it to the people. And then we had other people want to come in and they want to help. They saw us doing it. They want to help too. So that's how all that came about. Now we have five shelters. Well, two of them are transitioning homes. Well, three of them are transitioning homes and two of them are mental health homes.
Yes. Right.
And we serve each of those homes a hot meal once a month, and it's usually the last Sunday of each month.
Now, are these homes that other people have organized as shelters or places of refuge?
They like shelters.
So did other people organize that, and then you come to those locations, or is this something you played a role in organizing?
Something we did on our own. We played a role in. We organized and put it together.
Well, tell us about that. That's interesting.
Like I said, we have five homes. We meet up at 12 o'clock noon to the first spot. And then it'd be like 7 to 8 cars. We all trail each other. Everybody meet up at the one home, and we all go up together and take the food up to the people. We have conversation with them, see if it's anything special that they need, or is it anything that they need that they're not getting. No, we build relationships with the people. Miss Gloria made it where they get IDs if they didn't have IDs. She helped them get IDs, tell them they can get bus passes and all that. If they want to try to get a job, she helped with that. So, yeah.
Does you doing that, Skyla, help heal you of your wounds?
Yes, because it makes me feel good to give, because what I found out about my son, he was a giver, and he made sure people was okay. And that's one way for me to honor him, is to make sure people are okay and to do whatever I can to help somebody.
How about you, Gloria?
Okay, we also started what we call Bridging the Gap Between Cops and Kids. And we have the East St. Louis Police Chief Kendall Perry and Illinois State Police. We have like 3 of them that comes out. So we go out to the places, talk to the kids, so we can save our kids. And we go to a place called the Take Center. It's teen against killing everywhere. And they from the ages of 16 to 24. And it's like a trade school teaching them carpentry, painting. And what we do is we go in there and talk to them about self-help skills, bring people in to talk with them so they can understand you're here, but we want to give you life skills so you can do better. We don't want to... When I bring the police in, I say, I'll bring them in now so you can get to know them instead of them having to lock you up and you get to see them then. And when I tell them I'm bringing the police, like, oh, no, we don't want to talk to them. But after talking with them, they say, thank you. Even one have joined the East St. Louis Police Department. So that's a big difference.
I'm interested in learning more about your views of the causes of gun violence in East St. Louis, and what can be done about it?
Okay, mostly it's about respect. They feel disrespected, and they got their gun in their hand. One time, me and Yolanda Wooten was out canvassing, and we was in John DeShields, and we walked by, and the two guys was arguing. One was on one side, and the other was across the street, and they was arguing. So when I walked by, the guy was getting ready to shoot him. He went in his pants and getting ready to pull a gun up. And one of the guys next to him said, hey, man, don't do that. That's Hicks' mom. He's like, who? Detective Hicks' mom. So the guy put his gun back in his pocket, in his pants. And I'm like, thank you. I said, because I was going to tell. He said, he looked at me and I started laughing. I said, look, I was going to get on that phone and call 911. Hey, he just shot somebody. And I said, but what you don't think is, it's like 20 people standing around you. Somebody in their group gonna tell. I say, it don't make no sense to do that. And I said, thank you for not shooting, because I was gonna tell. I'm telling you right now, I was gonna tell it. So when we walked past, we did what we had to do. On the way back, the guy was still standing there. I said, he said, I'm sorry, ma'am. I said, come here, let me talk to you. So I'll say, you know that was crazy, right? He said, yeah, he just made me mad. But to make you that mad, to want to take his life, I asked him, you got a baby mom, you got kids? He said, yeah. I said, you know that while you in jail, your friend going to be your new baby daddy, right? You're going to get with your girl. He's like, no, I don't think so. I said, you got your mother still alive? Yeah. I said, you're going to break your mother's heart. Do you have 20 years to give for something that simple? He said, yeah, but just, I was like, but think about it. What gives you the right to be judge, jury, and executioner of that man's life? I said, it's not worth it. Do you think you taking his life going to make you any better? He's like, no, I was just so mad. I said, sometimes it's best to walk away. I said, and he was like, thank you. And I walked away, then I turned around, came back, and I gave him a hug. I'm like, thank you for not doing that, because I don't want to see that. He said, no, ma'am, thank you, because I wasn't thinking. I said, I appreciate you. But just the fact that just that fast, he could have took that young man's life. Or it could have been the other way around. That guy could have had a gun and shoot over there and killed more than one people. You just got to be out there thinking and then, you know, being respectful. He didn't have to do that, but the other guy told him, you know, he know me, which he did, and I'm just like, thank you for not doing that. Because I don't want to have to go home and think about what I just seen, be on my conscience. I couldn't sleep that night. But just being thankful that I could talk to him and make him think. And that's what we do with youth at the Take Center or anywhere else. Try to open their eyes to think before you do things.
You probably saved somebody's life.
Oh, yes.
You saved somebody from getting shot at least. And so the person that was getting shot at could have been killed. Or somebody in the one of the houses around them or just in the vicinity could have been killed. The person who did the shooting could have been in prison for years. And all because of an impulsive act by somebody who was carrying a gun.
Right.
Now, what can a community do about that? You did what is really important that a community can do. You were eyes on the street.
Right.
And you had the courage to put yourself actually in harm's way.
Right.
And say, don't do this. Stop and think. I'm telling you, I am just impressed enormously by what you did and by the impact and how that's something that you could do.
Right.
I mean, you couldn't take away the gun.
Nope.
But you intervened and you were eyes on the street and you caused somebody to think about what they were doing, and it not only changed that, it probably changed the way he reacts when he gets into similar conflicts.
Right.
Stop and think.
Dave, I was asked something else too. I worked at Community Lifeline, and we went through a training with Metropolitan Peace Academy, and after we got through, we went to Chicago, and we went to those areas, and every time we went to one area, and they'll tell us go to the other one. But I said, well, come on, y'all. We'll follow y'all. They said, no, we can't go. So they couldn't go from their turf to the next turf because of the gangs, and they just don't work together like that. And in East St. Louis, we can go to any of them and still be out there. But we went to, like, four different places, and each one, they'll tell us the same thing when we go to the next one. They couldn't go. They couldn't cross the turf. And I was like, but y'all sending us? I'm like, you know, just the fact that we did get to learn a lot and see a lot. But when I came back home, I'm like, well, we don't have turfs here. It's just neighborhoods, even though they have neighborhood gangs, but they can't go across without having to worry about getting killed. And I learned that from being in Chicago.
Yeah, every community's different.
Yes.
Even neighborhoods can be different. Even just on one side of the street versus the other side of the street.
Yes.
But it sounds to me like East St. Louis, for all its problems, is still more a community.
Yes.
Now, I know there are some streets where you just don't want to be going down those streets.
We go down all the streets.
All the streets, yeah.
We don't have a problem going down any street.
Hey, you two ladies are...
Everybody knows us.
You are heroes in my mind. I'm serious.
Pop up, like when it's homicides, we used to pop up on the scene. I call Miss Glory.
Hold it. Whoa. Yeah. There's a homicide. There's a shooting.
We pop up on the scene to talk and comfort the families.
Right.
Tell us more about that.
Skylar called me. Come on, Miss Gloria, meet me here. Something just happened. And No question, did we go. And my son is an East St. Louis detective, and he said, I knew y'all was coming. So, you know, but we go out there to support the families and, you know, give them our victim compensation form. But they got so used to seeing us out there that, you know, oh, I was wondering what took y'all so long to get out here. And I'm like, oh, so embarrassed. But, you know, just having the trust in the community is what. Hey, one time we went there and the police, I seen one of the Illinois State Police that I knew. So I was texting her, hey, I see you over there. Come over here where we at. So she came from round out of the tape and was over there talking because Skylar knew the family and we was talking to her. So she was able to give the family her card and they was talking to them. So that was like bridging the gap between the family and the police because family don't trust police. But since we knew the police and she knew the family, we just brought them together right then and there, which makes a big difference in the community.
Why don't the people in the community trust the police who, from the police perspective, they would say, my job is to protect the community. And from the people in the community, you're saying they don't trust them. What's up about that?
Maybe they had a bad experience at some point. I don't know.
Right. And this way they talk to them, or not hearing what they want to say, or even solving old crimes. They said, well, you didn't solve that crime. Well, maybe she thinks you're going to solve mine, you know. But it's getting better. I can actually say, since we've been working with the police, things are getting much better. They're solving so many more crimes now than ever. But we just want them to go back and get the old ones that haven't been solved and work on them, because they solving these new crimes real quick. Because people are beginning to trust the police more, but they need to go back and solve other crimes that happened before. That's our issue right now.
Yeah, that's what I'm working on now. I'm with Moms Demand Action, and we've been all up to the state in Springfield fighting for them to go back at least 5 years and reopen some of these cases back up. Because I don't feel like a case should be closed unless it's solved.
The police can just get overwhelmed in a high crime area because what they need to be able to do, the police and the prosecutors, what they need are witnesses. And if the witnesses are afraid to come forward or for whatever reason, unwilling, maybe the shooter was somebody that they even knew could be a friend. A lot of reasons that people sometimes may not be willing to step forward and be a witness. Well, if you don't have witnesses, it's hard to make a case.
Yeah.
And so those are tough. And then while you're sitting there trying to solve that one, there's another one and another one. And the police get overwhelmed. And as the result of that, the community can lose faith in the police and their ability to solve a crime. So if they can't solve the crime, why talk to them? And it's a vicious cycle. So there's been, Gloria, you mentioned that East St. Louis has experienced over the last 2 or 3 years, a significant drop in shootings.
Yes.
What's behind that in your perspective?
Well, I could say maybe people thinking more about the time, or people just don't feel like it's worth it, losing their life going to jail or taking a chance of being killed themselves. But I like to add that in East St. Louis,
and some people starting to tell.
Right. We have 5 police in our chapter. We have 3 Illinois State and 2 East St. Louis police that come to our meeting. They talk with the families. And that's something that nowhere else happens. They are part of the team. We can call them. They'll come out and talk with us. And that's what bridging the gap in the community, too. We let them speak
bridging
every time
the gap.
We have the event. Yeah, bridging the gap. And it works. I want to thank Kendall Perry, East St. Louis Police Chief. He's always there. We can always call him, text him, and if we need some information or we got something we got to tell him, he's always there for us.
As you reflect on your experiences and the things that you've done, things that you've seen that didn't work well, things that did work well, let's kind of close up this conversation with hearing what you each have to say about things that you wish were different and that maybe people in a community, including the police, including the residents, including service agencies could do differently that would make a difference and reduce gun violence and help people who are victims of gun violence deal with it and heal from the trauma and the grief. What would you like to see different? Skyla, let's start with you.
I would like to feel like the police actually cares about our loss. I would like to see my community stand up and speak on what they see and not be afraid. And I would also like the police to get these families to security that do tell so they won't feel like that they're in danger. And I guess everybody just come together as a community and let's bring back the old way of caring. You know, just because you're not my family don't mean that I shouldn't care about what's happening to you. You know, it take a village. It take all of us. And in order to make it work, at least for our grandkids and the younger kids, then I think when we have these meetings and we out here protesting and advocating, then we need our community support. They need to stand behind us and stand with us and not on the side of us.
How about you, Gloria?
I just like more families to open up, more people to learn to trust the police. And then the police be more diligent with the families. You know, talk to them, call them, check on them. Don't just sit, you know, when you see them like, oh, if they get a phone call, they just look at it. Answer it. Reach out to them. You know, they are here in the community. Go to the schools. Talk to the kids. Save these kids. Be more diligent to speaking with these kids, not at them. Just being more respectful to the people, because sometimes they're kind of disrespectful. I understand that Illinois State Police come in here, they're doing a lot of traffic stops, but, you know, it don't have to be as much as they doing, as many as they have out here, because I feel like we're under martial law sometimes. It'd be so many of them out there. Split them up. Let them do half in that day. Be out there at nighttime when the crime is happening. You know, they be up and down the streets in the daytime, but nighttime when the crime is happening, they're at home. Ride these streets when they're out there.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I'm just saying that we need jobs for them. If they had a job, they wouldn't be on the streets. If they had better housing.
Some places for these kids to go to keep them off the streets.
Yes. Yes.
And I think they need to close these clubs down early.
When the jobs left, the people left.
Why are you still there?
Because this is home. This is all we know. Well, Miss Gloria have been other places, but this is the only place I ever lived. So this is pretty much home for me.
And Gloria, then why do you stay?
I love it here in East St. Louis. East St. Louis is the only place that I can say they have an open door policy. You can go to City Hall, you go to the police department. It's what you make of it. I really, really love East St. Louis. I lived in California. I lived in Springfield. I lived in Arkansas. But there's, like she said, there's no place like home. And I, you know, when people say bad things about East St. Louis, I say, we're the city of champions. We are who we are. And even government, we can go to Springfield. They know about East St. Louis. We can go to Chicago. They know about East St. Louis. We went to Washington, D.C. They know about East St. Louis. We're proud to be from East St. Louis. We got that pride. You know, what people think of us, you only answer to what you do. And we're here, right, Skyla?
Yeah.
We represent.
I ain't going nowhere.
Gloria, I want to go back just a little bit and ask you this question. Your son became a police detective, a police officer, then a detective.
Yes.
He lived in that community the same as people that are shooting at each other. What made the difference?
Well, the reason why he said he became a police officer, because he wanted to do it differently. He wanted to be able to make a change to treat people the way they should be treated. And he had made a difference in there, you know, and that's a good thing. They trust him. And I'm like, wow. Because I was like, you sure this is what you want to do? He's like, yes, ma'am. He just made sergeant last week. So So he's going up the ranks, and he also is a coach for Eastside. He loves his job. There's no place like home. And we're trying to make a difference, make it better.
And we don't have a lot of run-ins with the police like other little community do. We don't really have a big police problem where they harassing the citizens and they beating on them and, you know, things like that. We don't have those type of problems.
I want to tell you, it has been a real honor to talk to you two ladies. I said earlier that in my eyes, you two are heroes. You really are. And I just admire what you're doing and what Gloria, your son, is doing. Skyla, it's just such a tragedy that you lost Aaron, because it sounds like he could have been part of this. Yes. And could have been part of this changing of the community, and that's a terrible loss. So every time a life is saved, it impacts not just the people in the immediate family, but also everybody that could have been, yes, their lives could have been improved by the service of Aaron and other people who are victims of gun violence. But you two are making a difference. And it would be so easy for you to move. It would be so easy for you to turn inward, and yet you've turned outward.
Yes.
And I can tell that that's been because of your hearts and because of just the kind of people you are, but it's also been healing to you. Obviously, yes. Skyla, you've talked, I mean, that you can see it.
Yes, it's been healing for me because it gives me something to do where it takes my mind away from, you know, what the reality is, and it keeps me from wanting to hurt somebody. I have my days now, don't get me wrong, where I feel like I should just have killed them and got it over with. But I know that's not what God wants me to do, so I don't interact with that. I have to pray hard.
Right there, what you just said illustrates two ways of thinking. There's fast thinking and slow thinking.
Yes.
Fast thinking, I just want to kill somebody and get it over with.
Yes.
Slow thinking is what you just described, where you slow down, you think about it, and you make a different decision.
Yes, because it made me just like them. If I interact and do the things that they done, then I'm no better than them. I'm just like them. So I have to slow myself down and bring myself back, you know?
If everybody did that, our communities would be much safer.
We just started our own group called The Chosen One. And we just started our own group called The Chosen One. And we have been having events for families, and we talk about crime. We talk about everything. And we had one talking about crime victims, letting them know about the victim compensation forms and everything. And then the last one we did was for mothers. And then next month we're going to do one for fathers, and then we're doing one for returning citizens, people that's been in prison and back home. So we're doing a lot in the community, and we don't have a 501c3. It's just a group of us together, and we're working on this from the kindness of our hearts. And it's working. We have people from the mosque. We have mothers and lost loved ones. We have people that own their own business. We have everything we need in a group, and it's working. We're giving back to the community.
Well, you're building community. You are acting as the heart or part of the heart of a community. And I am just so honored to meet you two and to be able to have a conversation with you two. And I want to thank you for being on this program.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Some observations about the conversation you just heard. Skyla and Gloria just provided us with a textbook clear example of what it takes to reduce gun violence in many high crime communities. In his recent book, titled Unforgiving Places, Jens Ludwig, director of the Chicago Crime Lab, says his decades of research shows gun violence happens primarily as a spontaneous reaction, during interpersonal conflicts such as arguments, or in reaction to feeling disrespected. Rather than being the result of calculated criminal acts, making it more circumstantial and therefore preventable than assumed by traditional law enforcement-based approaches. In his analysis, he emphasizes the key difference between fast and slow thinking, which are literally two different brain functions, sometimes described as System 1 and System 2 thinking. System 1 thinking is quick and automatic and occurs subconsciously as a reaction, not even what you would normally think of as thinking at all. During arguments, for example, people don't usually act rationally. And when guns are present, the combination of conflict plus guns is often deadly. Now, think about what Gloria did when she intervened to slow down the thinking of the young man who was drawing a gun to shoot at someone who angered him. As a respected elder in the community, she was able to intervene to, in essence, talk sense to the young man, to slow down his thinking rather than reacting on impulse. And she probably saved at least one and perhaps multiple lives in so doing. Ludwig emphasizes the importance of community eyes on the street, consisting of people around who are willing to step in and de-escalate something before it turns violent. Sometimes police strategically placed at the right places at the right times, and sometimes people living in the community. The more eyes on the street, the lower level of gun violence. For more, I recommend reading Ludwig's book, Unforgiving Places, The Unexpected Origins of American Gun Violence. Skyla and Gloria's voices are important, and their message needs to be heard by as many people as possible. You can help make that happen by doing two things. One, share a link to this episode on your social media and in emails to friends. Encourage them to listen to it in full. Two, subscribe to or follow this podcast and encourage others to do the same. The way YouTube and podcast platform algorithms work, the more people do those two things, the more those platforms feed it to others like you who may be interested, which can snowball into enough people listening to change perspectives and generate a critical mass of informed public opinion. We also want to express gratitude for the support received from a Healing Illinois grant, administered by the Field Foundation of Illinois through United Way of Central Illinois. Thank you. Justice is accountability plus healing. Justice is making things right. This is Justice Voices.